This is Will Friedle from Pod Meets World. Let's be honest. The 90s gave us some great things. The music, totally rad. The fashion, so fly. Home decor, that's a different story. In HGTV's new competitive series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars take on two homes frozen in time. Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets. Hello, 21st century. Totally 90s House. Special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
This is Rick Burgess from The Rick Burgess Show. If you're still auto-renewing your car insurance without shopping around, you are probably throwing money away. I'm telling you, go check out Insurify. In about 2 minutes, totally free, you can compare quotes from over 100 companies all in one place. Now, here's what I love. Insurify actually monitors your rates and alerts you when prices drop, so you never miss out on a better deal. Millions of people have used it to stop overpaying, and there's no reason you shouldn't too. Do yourself a favor. See what you can save right now at Insurify.com.
Okay. So instead of an intro button, we welcomed our special guest early. So we'll do that early, which is our special guest, ex-CIA analyst, great thinker on geopolitics and the deep machinations of the deep state, as Larry Johnson, guest of the show, friend of the show. We had a great episode with Larry a few months ago, where we did a deep dive in our redacted conversations. So we thought, why not have an ex-CIA analyst who understands government, understands all of this, to be on the show today to talk about this CIA story and others. So Larry, welcome back to the show. Great to see you.
Good to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So buckle your seatbelts.
Yeah. So there's a lot of really great international stories that we can have you ring in on today, because a lot of them just, you know, require a lot of context. So as we study them, we do our best to understand the context, but we're glad to have your expertise. Remember, to those of you who are at home, that you can join redacted.inc. That's our community that's separate of any social media platform, because you know, the social media platforms have rules of engagement that sometimes can get you when you're just trying to ask sincere questions. We try to play by the rules appropriately, but it's a moving target.
That's right.
So please become a part of our community, and you also get extras such as conversations like the one we have right now with our esteemed guest.
Yeah, like when we published Larry's video, we published it early to our redacted private community first before the rest of the world got to see it. So please go to redacted.inc and sign up and become a channel member there and become a supporter of the show. David is here. Philip is here. The whole team is here as we dive into today's top story. Let's talk about this World War III move. I didn't think it was possible, literally, to have your federal government poking three different bears simultaneously, but that's exactly what President Biden did. Of course, President Biden flying to Israel mm-hmm. over the past 24 hours, landing there, and then he's going to, of course, be flying to Saudi Arabia with that meeting. But one of the things that he talked about and was questioned about is Iran. He was also asked about Russia, and he was also, his administration at the same time, was also making moves against China. So all of these things were happening simultaneously while he is in Israel. And this is not good news. So first of all, I mean, I guess really we should start with the Iran piece of this, right?
Right. So as he attempts to renegotiate the Iran nuclear deal, which President Trump had pulled out of, and President Biden has said he wants to renegotiate, but there has been certain pieces that have not been falling into place just yet. When asked if he would be willing to use force to make sure that Iran does not get a nuclear weapon, the president says, yes, but only as a last resort. Now, we already know that the United States has gone out of its way to make sure that Iran cannot manufacture nuclear weapons. In fact, the United States was the first to ever put a hack on a foreign government in order to sort of make sure that their machines were not succeeding in making nuclear bombs, right? So that is something that happened during the Obama years. You know, is this something that will be necessary to actually go to blows with, or is this a deal that will be successful? There's so many questions, right, that those of us who really don't want nuclear weapons hanging out in the world
right.
have a vested interest in.
Well, let's ask Larry on this question. Larry, so your thoughts on this, that, you know, President Biden saying, we, you know, last resort, like we will not be using force against Iran. That's a, as a last resort. The questions about these, you know, and the status about Iran not getting a nuclear weapon. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Iran's going to get a nuclear weapon. I had a chat 15 years ago with one of my CIA classmates. We were all in the career trainee program together, and his job for, you know, most of his career, he's now retired, but for most of his career, he was responsible for recruiting and running Iranian assets, agents, people who were Iranian that worked in various parts of the Iranian government that were providing intelligence to the United States. And my friend told me very clearly, he says, you know, Iran's going to get a nuclear weapon. The, you referenced the failed authorized by George W. Bush, and I think carried out under Barack Obama, that got out of control. It did temporarily take down some of Iran's the machines that were used to enrich uranium, but they quickly got those back online. And so what happened out of that is actually Iran's ability to produce uranium increased despite that attack.
Wow.
The notion that the United States can attack and destroy these assets in Iran, they've watched too many of the Tom Clancy movies or the Tom Cruise movies. Take your pick.
Right, yes, that was literally part of the plot.
Yeah, they didn't even say Iran in the movie, but that was literally the plot of the latest Top Gun movie, right?
Not to give anything away. Yeah, and no spoilers.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, it's entertaining. I know people love, you know, have gone, oh, it's a great movie. It's well made. Fine. But it's ridiculous. Understand how big Iran compared to Iraq. I mean, we struggled in Iraq. Iran is four times the size of Iraq. And unlike Iran has mountains and a lot of the factories and the enrichment places that we'd be looking for that are not disclosed, that are, you know, classified, those are in mountain valleys. So it's not, they're not easy to attack. And then you get into this, the issue of how do you get your forces on scene? Because we don't have air bases now that are sitting in Iraq or in Turkey for that matter, and that neither country is likely going to allow us to launch a military operation from there. So then you're left with aircraft carriers, except if you put aircraft carriers into the Persian Gulf to try to do this, I wouldn't put it past Russia, that Russia, as a consequence of the United States providing HIMARS that are being used to kill civilians in the Donetsk and in Russia, that Russia will supply hypersonic missiles to the Iranians, and Iran could use a hypersonic missile on a U.S. aircraft carrier group, and there's not a damn thing the captain of that aircraft carrier can do to stop that attack.
Wow.
So then what is this posturing then, right? Because Iran is saying, well, we will agree to this nuclear deal if you declassify the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps as a terrorist group. So once we get this... Yeah. Reclassification will be pretty good, and we're ready to renegotiating. So is that just all talk, or is there something there that we don't understand?
Well, it's, again, just, you guys have dealt with Hollywood. You know, when you go out to Hollywood and you try to pitch a story, their question is always, well, who's the villain? So you got to have a great villain. As long as you got a good villain that you can riff off of, then you can justify a whole lot of things. Well, the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, Iran has been a very convenient villain, and we like to portray them as the number one sponsor of terrorism in the world. It's simply not true.
Right.
When you look at what Iran has done they've done targeted assassinations against Iranian dissidents. That was their big thing. They got out of the widespread terrorism business in the 1980s. What's really fascinating is when you look at the number of Iranian scientists, nuclear scientists, that have been assassinated in Iran, and those assassinations have been carried out with the help of Western intelligence and Israeli intelligence.
I was just about to ask you the Israel connection on that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, and I understand why Israel's doing it. I mean, this is, you know, intelligence organizations, they define who their enemies are and they go after them. But can you imagine the reaction that would take place in the United States if Iran hired a group that were going out, taking out our top scientists that were working on nuclear weapons and or cruise missile technology? Oh, my God, there would be a terrible uproar. Well, you know, when Iran reacts to that, they're a terrorist. When we react to that, we're on the side of God and the angels. And it's just, you know, the hypocrisy of it is distinct. The reality is Iran is they are a religious extremist country. And Obama completely dropped the ball with them in terms of trying to press for a deal where they would recognize Israel. And people say, oh, that's impossible. Well, they used to say it was impossible to have any reconciliation between Saudi Arabia and Israel. Donald Trump managed to pull that off. So there is, when you refuse to pursue some of those leads, then you leave yourself with this so-called option of, oh, yeah, we're going to punish Iran. The other thing Iran has is they've got the S-400, the Russian S-400 anti-air defense system. They will shoot down stealth planes of the United States if the United States or Israel deigned to try to attack targets inside Iran. And, you know, again, people watch too many of the Tom Cruise movies and think that we just do some nifty piloting can escape those things. And, you know, there's a rude awakening when he gets shot down.
So there's a couple of, well, there's a couple of pieces I wanted to say. So we have, that's the Iran piece of this,
yes.
Right? Then we have the Russia piece. Then we'll get to the China piece in a second to round out the triumvirate here. But this was a question he was asked yesterday in Israel about Russia and how long we plan to be in Ukraine funneling weapons and money into that country. Listen.
How long is this going to last? How long is this onslaught going to last?
His onslaught. As long as it's going to take. When we're there till... takes whatever time it takes. We cannot let him prevail.
It can take months. It can take years.
It could.
Mm-hmm. You think the war could take years to 10?
No, you said that.
Yeah,
you said
okay.
It could, okay?
It could.
No, it could.
Yeah, you said it could, and I'm saying it could, but you said it. No, you said it. I said it. I said it could. You could. You, man, this is the leader of the free world.
Well, I thought that was actually...
But
like,
he's.
I was like, you know, we're not really expecting him to be quite so fast on the uptake. And I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, no, you said you could. But then, you know, in the weeks beforehand, Larry, of course, he said multiple times, as long as it takes, as long as it takes, right? So, and that Russia has threatened now with these long-range weapons entering into Ukraine, right? The HIMARS, the long-range weapons. Yesterday, Russia issuing a warning saying, hey, if any of these, you know, we're worried about these long-range weapons now hitting nuclear reactors inside of Russia. So that's the Russian piece of this. Your thoughts on that, like how long this goes on and what is the end game here?
Well, tomorrow they're going to have a special session of the Russian legislature with Vladimir Putin. And reportedly Putin's going to ask for authorization to extend the special military operation outside of Ukraine and to go after terrorist targets. United States targets. Make it possible to start targeting NATO countries as well. So tomorrow is going to be pretty significant because Vladimir Putin doesn't bluff on this, but he's following the law and doing it very measured. As far as the ability of Ukraine to continue to fight, I mean, people got to stop smoking whatever it is they're smoking, you know, if it's heroin or methamphetamine, because the delusion that is prevalent right now in the West is bizarre. Russia has destroyed roughly 80% of all vehicles, tanks, aircraft of Ukraine.
Wow.
Von Clausewitz, in his writings on war, described something he called the culminating point. The culminating point was basically when the military ceased being able to operate. That is the status right now of the Ukrainian military. They can't organize, let's say, a tank battalion or a tank regiment because they don't have enough tanks. And they don't have enough trained people to drive the tanks because they have been killed. And it takes a while to train new ones. But just 2 days ago, or I guess yesterday, Wednesday, in outside of Kherson, the Ukrainians tried to mount an offensive, an attack on Kherson. And there's a great video out. You can see three lines, three columns of what is left of you of Ukrainian vehicles. The Russians literally shelled it. All you see is a long line of cloud and smoke where they've blown up the cars, trucks, and tanks that remain. So the West cannot supply that stuff fast enough. Almost as soon as they get it in, Russia's destroying it. And it's getting easier for Russia, not harder. The reason it's getting easier is that at the outset of the war, February 24th, yes, there were thousands and thousands of planes. So they had a lot of targets, but they were scattered all over. So trying to find them was difficult. Now, very, very few. And so they can focus in on tracking communications between both command headquarters and field units, as well as factories that are being used to try to repair some of this. And what's really fascinating is if you take time to look at the Ministry of Defense briefing by Russia, you'll see that they withhold a lot of information. But the key to their strategy is they are targeting command centers in the field. So far, they haven't hit Kyiv, but they're targeting these command centers in the field, essentially decapitating these units, which is why then the specific units that are deployed forward complain about not getting any guidance.
Oh, I see.
They've had their command leadership. So it's just the notion that the United States can do this, Biden's delusional. The way I look at it right now, I'll be shocked if Ukraine's able to mount any kind of... Number one, they have not mounted a credible threat in 5 months. Go back to the end of February, so over 4 months. And what I mean by that, where they've put together an organized force, they've been supported by fixed-wing aircraft or rotary-wing aircraft, they've got tanks, got artillery, got organized formations of soldiers, and they attack a Russian stronghold or a point that Russia just... And they overrun it, they push the Russians out, and then they hold it. They haven't done that. Not once since February 24th. Somebody ought to wake and recognize what this is, this notion that they're going to put together a million-man army to come down and push the Russians out of the southern coast. There's going to be a cavalry of unicorns before you see
them. Right. And so that's why this constant begging for more resources, right? And so the West can sort of say, well, we're really doing all we can, instead of really feeling like, well, we're kind of dumping money and weaponry down into a lost cause, and that it will reverberate.
Oh, it's making the organized criminals in Ukraine very happy. I mean, they're making money off of the humanitarian aid and off the military equipment.
Yes, yeah.
It's getting sold on the black market. Part of the issue is it's not just that the Russians have destroyed the equipment. They've also destroyed some of the best trained soldiers that, frankly, NATO spent 8 years training and equipping. They're dead or captured or incapacitated because of wounds.
Wow.
So where do you get new soldiers? Well, you go out and try to round them up. And when you look at what the Ukrainian police are having to do to try to get people to serve them with their enlistment papers, it's sort of like, I guess, that scene out of City Slickers where they're trying to herd cattle.
Right.
The cattle are running every different direction.
Yeah.
That's sort of what's going on in the Ukraine right now.
These are lives we're talking about, right? These are people who were trained for battle, and lives are not expendable. So when we think in the West that we should just open our checkbooks and send money and weaponry, we have to ask ourselves, even if we really believe what the media is telling us, that Ukraine has a chance, that we have to ideologically stand up to Russia, if we believe that, that's fine. But if we continue to send money to prolong this war, that means more people will die because we're prolonging an inevitability, right? So we have to ask ourselves that when you fly your Ukraine flag, is this a way that we're prolonging suffering?
That's right.
But not only that, but the other thing that's happening to be aware of is by introducing these advanced weapon systems like HIMARS, it's a multiple launch rocket system, by putting that in place, and it's hitting not military targets, but it's hitting civilian targets in both the Donbas and into Russia. At that point, Russia will retaliate against the United States. That retaliation against U.S. targets is coming, and at that point, the U.S. is going to face a choice. They're going to try to, if they try to respond in a conventional manner, we're going to get our ass kicked.
Period. Well, we're going to
get shot down.
And that's the question I have, Larry, because we just had a question from one of our viewers in the chat. Last night, we talked about that New York City amazing public service announcement about a nuclear attack on Manhattan.
Right.
And we've heard warnings, right? Sergey Lavrov, we've heard it from Putin. We've talked about the threat of a nuclear strike on the United States. Someone just wrote in the chat, they're terrified of this, like literally terrified of a dirty bomb. And we've heard rumors of this. There's been reports of this around New York City and so forth. Can you speak to that in your expertise about from an intelligence perspective?
Well, it is Russia now, for really the first time in history, has a clear advantage where if they decided to launch a nuclear attack against the United States would not be able to respond. Sure, we might get some launches off against Russia, but what Russia has put in place with its anti-missile air defense systems, the S-500 and the S-550, which is supposed to come online soon, they're literally in a position that they can shoot down our nuclear weapons. Our nuclear weapons would not hit the targets in Russia, but Russia's weapons would certainly hit targets in the United States. So the United States would be taken out. I think that remains a very, you know, the ultimate last resort. I think there are other measures that Russia could take in the interim, knock out all of U.S. satellites over, you know, for starters. Russia is in a far better position to conduct the elimination of U.S. communication satellites, U.S. spy satellites, literally blind us. So we would have no idea what's going on, and we'd have no ability to communicate internally. And internet would go down. The United States would be basically back in the 19th century. So, and people say, oh, no, Russia. We keep forgetting that for, you know, about 10 years, Russia was playing our Uber driver, taking us to the space station because we couldn't build and still cannot build the rockets. The one rockets that we're, quote, relying on are being built by Elon Musk.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The government, it's not being built by NASA. So this aspect of how space could enter in as a component in the warfare is, you know, something I don't think a lot of people have seriously considered.
Well, we've talked about it here on the show, and I make a fun of it, but I also point out that, you know, this whole Space Force idea, like there's legitimacy behind this idea, right? We have, like, it was, you know, we talk about it as we want to explore the stars, but it's really another branch of the military. And as we look at China, Philip, you want to take my laptop here. So we got this news overnight. U.S. sends destroyer near these islands in the South China Sea. China calls it illegal. USS battleship USS Benfold traveled near the archipelago of more than 100 reefs. This on top of the news that we just got from Kamala Harris weighing in and announcing two new embassies in Tonga and Kiribati in a push into Vanuatu, into that whole area, into Fiji. It's all about friendship, right? Right, Larry?
Right. What are they calling it? A freedom. Oh. What did they say? It's a freedom.
It's a freedom something. It's a freedom sandwich. It's a freedom.
Like it was a freedom. Go back to that. It was
flotilla.
Just
a
freedom.
China says it's story. Illegal. About the pleasure cruise.
Oh, the pleasure cruise.
That China says, it's a freedom of navigation operation, the U.S. says.
Oh, a freedom of navigation operation. That's all it is, Larry.
That was necessary to assert rights and freedoms under international law in disputed waters. So those are clear fighting words that this is a contested area and we are here to contest.
of the three conflicts that you know, outlined at the start, Iran, Ukraine, and China, the one that is actually currently the most dangerous and the most likely to touch off the exchange of fire is then in China. The commander of the Pacific Command, it's called PACOM in military jargon. I've heard expressions from other officers who are familiar with that, with him and his actions. They consider him extremely reckless and dangerous, that he is taking steps that are deliberately trying to provoke the Chinese. And again, this is one of those cases where the United States is failing to consider the fact that China does have hypersonic weapons. Hypersonic weapons can destroy U.S. ships. That means our U.S. ships dare not get within 1,000, 2,000 miles of China once they get. And I do not dismiss this as something that's highly unlikely. I think, in fact, it's highly likely, because the belligerence of the United States in its demands and commands to China, what China must do, have been pushed back on sharply by both the foreign minister, by the president of China, and by the minister of defense of China. I mean, they're not taking any crap off of the United States. And so every one of these moves that we think, you know, we're showing the flag and we're showing freedom of navigation, Chinese, you know, they're patient, but I think these times we're going to cross that barrier and cross the red line, so to speak, and the Chinese will retaliate. And when they retaliate, they will sink one or two U.S. naval ships, at which point the United States is going to have to figure out, what do we do to respond? Well, if you respond by trying to send an aircraft carrier group towards your shores, they've got hypersonic missiles, and they will destroy those aircraft carrier groups. So all of a sudden, then what do? We leave ourselves no other choice but to go nuclear. And then at that point, Russia weighs in as well. Said, no. You do this, you're gonna eliminate yourself. China does not have as robust or advanced missile defense system as does Russia. So Russia actually remains all of this, even though China is much less, economy is much larger. Russia actually holds a lot of the cards.
Our guest is ex-CIA analyst Larry Johnson. You can find him over at sonar21.com. He's joining us for the hour here to talk about a lot of the big stories. We've got a big story we're going to talk about next about the CIA and a conviction there. We're going to also talk about the January 6th hearings, some really interesting story that no one's talking about on the January 6th hearings. We'll talk about all of that. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at GoldCo, because if you have an IRA, you have a 401k or a savings account, things are scary out there. The Biden administration has already printed more money in the past 2 years than the previous 100 years combined. The national debt hit a record $30 trillion, and inflation is the highest we've seen since 1981. Well, those are all good numbers, right? And by the way, the Biden administration continues to blame Russia and Republicans for this inflation. So it's only a matter of time before the house of cards comes crashing down. If you have a retirement savings, your money could be at serious risk right now. Talk to my friends over at GoldCo to see how you can protect your retirement with actual precious metals, gold and silver, before it's too late. You know that I'm a gold bug. I've been talking about gold and silver on this show for many, many years. It is the one thing that has sustained for thousands of years through all sorts of famine, turmoil. It is precious metals. So go to redactedlikesgold.com. They will give you $10,000 or more in free silver when you open a qualifying account. That's redactedlikesgold.com. And my friends at GoldCo are actually going to give you $10,000 or more in free silver when you open a qualifying account. So our guest on for the full hour is ex-CIA analyst Larry Johnson. He's a great mind on all things geopolitical and the deep state, the deep machinations of this federal government, and a big story on a CIA conviction that we want to get his take on.
So on Wednesday, a former CIA engineer was convicted on 9 counts of a case that accused him of stealing classified government information. The classified information was called Vault 7, and I want to discuss it for a few reasons. One, the case is strange because it sort of shoots some holes in how airtight the CIA can be and how dependent they are on basically human behavior.
Larry's laughing about the airtightness of it. We'll get to that in a second.
But also there's this idea that Vault 7 exists, that the United States government has the tools to reach as far as it wants into your digital life. So let me introduce you to the case a little bit, and then we'll get your take on it. So the person who was convicted is named Joshua Schultz. He worked inside the Operations Support Branch, or OSB unit, at the CIA. His nickname there was Badass and Voldemort because he had a shaved head like the Harry Potter villain. Now, most of the engineers had nicknames, though, inside his unit, so that's not in and of itself quite so incriminating. One guy who got braces as an adult was called Train Tracks. The OSB is a physical hacking unit, though. It's when someone wants to hack into your life and they send out, say, a plumber to your house, right, who then puts something on your hard drive while you're going to the bathroom or something like that, right? It's that type of thing. They will always deny that they do it, that their sort of modus operandi is plausible deniability. Well, until Vault 7 was published on WikiLeaks. So what is Vault 7? According to Nicole Perlroth's book, it is like an instruction manual for how the CIA can hack into cars, smart TVs, web browsers, the operating systems of Android, Apple, and Windows, Mac, and Linux, basically the motherlode. It's like, oh, we want to get into you. That guy has this. This is how we do it, right? Vault 7 was published on WikiLeaks on March 7th of 2017, but the CIA didn't know it, actually, that it had been published for a year until WikiLeaks, or it had been hacked, but they didn't know it until WikiLeaks published it, which is interesting. Now, this is in the wake of many leaks from a group called Shadow Brokers, and so initially the CIA thought this was the work of Shadow Brokers, but Shadow Brokers didn't take the credit. So Vault 7 not only showed the public what the CIA was doing, it showed them the targets. And so, say, one target could figure out what the CIA had on their phone, right? The thing is, this was not on a public network, and it was only hosted inside the CIA's network. So the CIA believed that this was an inside job. Now, by the time they figured this out, this guy Schultz was already working for Bloomberg in New York City in the private sector. He had had a very long and drawn out personnel battle with someone inside the CIA where, like, he was shooting him with Nerf guns. The guy didn't like it. He said threatening things. It seems very juvenile, but it went all the way to the fact that Schultz filed a restraining order with the courts against this person. And this was not supposed to happen. In the CIA, things are supposed to just stay inside the CIA. You should not take this public. Am I right, Larry? Do you want to ring in on that before we keep going, that like, well, this guy doing this, going into the court system against his CIA coworker was already strange?
Well, Schultz, I think, illustrates, if I'm not mistaken, he was a contractor. He was not a full-time blue badge. You know, they call them blue badgers. Blue badgers are people who are actually full-time CIA employees and are part of the CIA organization and will retire with a CIA pension if they somehow manage to stick around for 20 years. What has happened, particularly since 9/11, is a lot of the intelligence activities were contracted out to subcontractors, just like Edward Snowden. Snowden worked for the agency for a while, and then Snowden was actually working as a contractor. But as a contractor, you will hold top secret compartmented clearances and what they call SAP clearances, special access programs. So those are even beyond top secret. It's inclusive. So what Schultz was working on was clearly a SAP. And the SAPs are controlled from the standpoint you have to sign in, be read into them, sign it. And then when they end the SAP, sometimes you have to sign out. The fact that he got away with carrying this out, and he tried to portray himself as a whistleblower. I don't think he was a whistleblower. His vindictive. He was very self-centered. The allegation that he also had child pornography on his computer, I don't know if the FBI planted that. I wouldn't put it beyond the FBI to do that, or if it was legitimate on his part.
Well, let me just ring in on that
he's
part
got
because
on that. Yeah.
Yes. So that is actually what they picked him up for, right? So they went and searched his computers, and they raided his home, and they found a server. Basically, he had been hosting a server inside of his computer, but he was kind of dumb enough to keep the passwords on his phone, which they also had. So they were able to get into that server, and they found child pornography. And he says he was hosting it on a public server for like his high school buddies, right? But then separately, they also found a photograph of a woman in a bathroom at the CIA who was his roommate. And she appears to be unconscious. And in the photograph, he's touching her inappropriately. And this is how he was also charged with sexual assault. And the woman says, I don't remember taking this. Clearly, you know, this was not consensual. So these two pieces, you know, whether or not, I mean, it doesn't seem very plausible that the government could plant at least the second one, right? Are something that the government has said that it will put on the back burner while it tries the Vault 7 case. And he still does have to try those sexual assault and pornography cases. He says if the CIA goes ahead with this, though, he's going to expose the CIA for all kinds of nefarious things, right? So, but the pieces about sort of the unsavoriness of his character exist. He is not, he had posted on Twitter that he is anti-Snowden, anti-Chelsea Manning. He thought both of those people should be severely punished. He's not an idealist like this. So, you know, but is he somebody who, but he knew that Vault 7 would embarrass the government. So one of my questions is, why hasn't it really caused the outrage that the Snowden documents did?
Well, because do you remember that, you know, we talked about a little earlier without naming it Stuxnet. So the Stuxnet virus was produced initially by the United States. It was unleashed on Iran by the Israelis without, you know, giving the United States an advance warning. And then it got out of control and actually went around the world and shut down a lot of businesses and such. So the idea, you know, all Vault 7 proved was what was already established, which is the United States has got major software for hacking foreign computers and doing it in a variety of ways. So that was not as stunning Snowden provided, which was that, in fact, the U.S. government is actively spying on Americans and invading your privacy across the board. What is interesting is that WikiLeaks did not publish the full, you know, they kept some control over what was released. They showed the general categories of what the CIA was doing with these hacker tools, but they didn't actually release the code so it could be used. So they showed some journalistic responsibility in that case. But this guy Schultz, let's call him an accidental whistleblower. I don't know if he sent the stuff initially to WikiLeaks as for a vendetta or to get paid.
But there was never any communication between him and WikiLeaks. It does, but WikiLeaks actually had a backup that he had done. So it's like the forensics of it is still a little bit strange. But then also the fact that the CIA knew that this guy was volatile, that he was, you know, having this strange vendetta against a coworker. I guess I'm asking, how common is that? That there's just like personnel issues that blow up and then actually have national security implications?
Oh, not only is it very common, I think it's probably worse now than it's ever been in the history of the CIA. I mean, go back to Robert Ames, who was discovered in around 1992.
Right.
He was spying for the then Soviet Union. and had given, you know, quite a bit of damning information. He had all the warning signs back then in terms of having too much money for his income level, extravagant lifestyle, living, you know, wearing the suits, a variety of things. Nobody picked up on it until after the damage was already done. Now what you've created in CIA is they're so focused upon having, you know, the right pronouns and the multiple mixes of genders and different shades of hair color, that little attention's paid to actual whether lifestyle creates some vulnerabilities that could be exploited by foreign intelligence services. I guarantee you right now, if I, whether I'm, you know, Russian, Israeli, French, British, God, I couldn't wait to work against U.S. intelligence targets, because they're going to be so much easier to recruit now than it was the case during the Cold War.
Yeah.
Our guest is Larry Johnson, ex-CIA analyst. Any final questions on this story? I mean, I think the CIA, you know, the Mike Pompeo angle of the Vault 7 thing is really interesting, right? I mean, this is exactly what what Julian Assange's wife has said, that Mike Pompeo, who was then CIA director at the time of the leak, said instructed the CIA to assassinate Julian Assange in response to the Vault 7 story. Can you speak to that at all, Larry?
I don't know if he actually issued that, because it violates the executive orders 12333, is it? And 12345. There are two executive orders that were issued back in the days of Ronald Reagan, specifically banning assassinations. The anger at Julian Assange is so misplaced. Julian Assange is, he may be a jerk in the views of some people, but he's done legitimate journalism. And the reason the United States is so angry at him is he's exposed a lot of very ugly things that the United States has done.
Yes.
And it's just the inconvenient truth. It's the real inconvenient truth here, is that the lies that were sold to the American people about why we went to war in Iraq, why we went to war in Afghanistan, expanded the war in Afghanistan, didn't take care of bin Laden, you know, whole variety of things. Julian Assange has exposed that. And Assange, and as well, some of the WikiLeaks material exposes the fact that Russia had been communicating with the United States for quite a while about how it would react if the West persisted in trying to bring Ukraine into NATO.
Our guest is Larry Johnson, ex-CIA analyst. You can find him over at sonar21.com, where he does great writing there on currently what's happening in Ukraine and around the world, geopolitics as well as intelligence. So great to have Larry here on the show. We've got more news to get to here on the show coming up. We're going to talk about the January 6th hearings and some startling revelations from AOC, actually. I mean, actually surprising comments from her about one big question that hasn't been answered and hasn't been covered during these January 6th hearings. Why were people letting people in the door? Hey, come on in. Come on in. And where are those police officers?
Yeah, we forgot all about that.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting point, right? We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk more with Larry about Ambassador Bolton's comments yesterday on coup attempts around the world. And we're going to talk about this new variant that the mainstream media is pushing as hard as they can ahead of the midterm elections. So before we get there, we're going to tell you about Anthem Software. Do you own a small business and need help growing it? Then AnthemSoftware.com is your one-stop solution. Anthem Software helps small businesses all over America find, serve, and keep more customers profitably by providing world-class CRM software and results-focused marketing services that your business will allow, you know, it allows your business to not only grow, but dominate in this highly competitive modern world. That's AnthemSoftware.com. Every business has a song. Let AnthemSoftware.com help you sing yours. Visit AnthemSoftware.com to schedule your free demo of this amazing solution for software. And it's a fantastic CRM software solution that you absolutely want to check out right now. AnthemSoftware.com. Our thanks to them for supporting the show. All right, let's turn our attention to the January 6th hearings. We were talking about it earlier, and boy, the ratings have been like, right? They've been like off the charts.
Yes, for MSNBC and CNN, the networks that chose to run these, they have been a ratings boom. 3 million people at their peak have decided to watch these, whereas Fox is losing these time slots because Fox decided not to.
Right. And they're losing these time slots in some ways, and not in certain parts of primetime, but it's actually interesting to see how many people are focused on these January 6th hearings. They've done some during the day and then some at night. But a big question that has not been asked and has not been brought up during these January 6th hearings, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, of all people, to her credit, has actually raised the alarm bells on this issue. She tweeted this, and then she was out in front speaking on this, but she said, remember how there was tons of footage and evidence of officers and others inside on the 6th of January supporting insurrectionists. But then everyone decided it was too politically risky to investigate thoroughly, so they brushed it under the rug, and now we still have no idea who or what is safe. Now, joining us to talk about this and more is Larry Johnson, ex-CIA analyst. I want to get his take on all this and why this is being kept quiet. But first, I want to play this soundbite from AOC on the footsteps of the Capitol, talking about this exact issue. Listen to her as she's approached by a reporter to talk about this. Watch.
If these insurrectionists,
like Antifa,
and that there were actual officers working with this, and we never got to the bottom of that, and we never got any answers about that, and then to this day we're just supposed to pretend that that never happened.
Without Antifa,
I have no idea what happened to the people on the inside who were very clearly sympathetic with what was going on and opening the doors wide open for that. And I'm supposed to sit here and pretend like none of that ever happened. And then right afterwards, you have a massive, you know, you just have this idea that throwing money at that problem is going to make it go away without any accountability. And so this is where these things are breaking down. We're not safe. And it's not just about members of Congress not being safe. The food staff workers aren't safe. The janitors aren't safe. Like, we need to get to the bottom of this. So that's all I
got to
say.
Thank you, Congresswoman.
So you hear someone in the background yelling, well, you could burn some buildings down like Antifa or Black Lives Matter, and, of course, trying to get her to raise that up. But I think she raises a good point, right? As we watched this unfold on this show that afternoon, we did live coverage on the show, and we were watching, and we were saying, wait a minute, did that just happen? Did we literally see Capitol Police and other who knows who they were pulling back the barricades and allowing people into the Capitol building? People taking selfies.
Well, there
were
other videos.
Yeah, go ahead, David.
There were other videos that I've seen that completely have disappeared. Like, there were videos. Remember when we saw the people handing sticks out of the windows from inside? And then you can't find that video anymore.
Yeah,
anywhere.
Gone. Yeah, to even try to find video for tonight's show, to try to find it. Good luck finding it.
Yeah.
Like, good luck finding this video. And this has not come up during the January 6th hearing. So ex-CIA analyst Larry Johnson is joining us right now to talk about this. Larry, what's your take on that? Why has this question not come up during the hearings?
It's real simple. If they dig into it, they're going to discover that the entire thing was a setup that was encouraged by the FBI. I mean, Ray Epps is the number one case in point. He's the poster child for this. Former, retired member of the Marine Corps. Lives, I believe, in Arizona. They've got him on video, repeatedly on video, not just once, but multiple times, inciting the crowd, telling the crowd they needed to go into the Capitol, they needed to attack the Capitol.
Right.
And so when you've got someone like that who's out openly saying it, and then what has happened to him? Nothing. They put a 69-year-old grandmother with cancer into prison for 60 days just because she walked in the Capitol. But Ray Epps, who was literally encouraging, and they got one scene of him at one of the police barriers where he's whispering in the ear of someone, and then the kid then goes and actually attacks those police, and they get through there with force. But Epps should have been picked up, arrested, and charged if this was, in fact, if he was acting on his own. But he was not acting on his own. There is other ample evidence that there were undercover operatives placed in the crowd to try to incite and create this incident. What is fascinating, too, is the fact that you do have on the multiple videotapes where the police just stand, these people come in. They don't try at all to resist them. And the one guy, he's from my neck of the woods here in Florida, Jason, you know, the buffalo, the guy wearing the buffalo headdress with the, right, the horns, when he comes strolling into the House chamber, there's a, you know, a police officer, a Capitol police officer with him. Just, they're having sort of a pleasant chat, and the guy's just keeping tabs, make sure nobody does anything destructive. Despite the meme that the Democrats have tried to present, and some Republicans, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, that this was a violent crowd. It was not a violent crowd. They didn't kill anybody. The only person actually murdered that day was Ashley Babbitt, an Air Force veteran who was shot by a Capitol Hill policeman. And, you know, I'm a certified firearms instructor. That guy is a clown. He should never have a in his hands. You don't pull a gun and point it at somebody that is not posing a direct threat, an imminent threat to your life. Ashley Babbitt did not have a weapon in her hand. She had no means of causing him physical harm. Yet he pulls a live firearm, points it at her, shoots her.
Yeah, through a window, through a barricade, through a window.
She had come through the window there.
Yeah,
I thought there was an officer who was suffocated and beaten.
That happened. Well,
actually, the officer, one of them had a stroke. He died 2 days later. It was natural causes. And none of the officers that claimed that they were attacked or suffocated, in fact, were by the protesters. That was just, in fact, there's other video that's emerged, and Gateway Pundit's done a good job of publishing a lot of this, that shows the police. There's another woman, I think her name is Rachel. She was physically beaten, and she died. But they show them before the Capitol cops surrounding her and just clubbing her. And then she suffered a heart attack and died.
So the Capitol police question, Larry, I mean, she brings that up. She says, you know, for us to just like throw money at that, like that's going to solve the problem.
Right.
It's a good question, right? I mean, so if you just like throw money at the Capitol police problem, is that going to solve what actually happened that day? People who were like letting people in different doors, pulling back barricades?
Well, remember, Donald Trump contacted Nancy Pelosi and asked, he said he was willing to send the National Guard there. Pelosi turned him down. She didn't want the National Guard up on Capitol Hill. I mean, that's a fact. So the fact that the Democrat leadership deliberately shied away from taking measures to defend the Capitol, gives more credence to the suggestion that they were complicit, at least in some measure, in allowing that to happen. It's not clear to what extent they were actively cooperating with the FBI and the Department of Justice. What we do know is that the intelligence warning that was passed to the Capitol Hill police made it very explicit that they expected the possibility of trouble the next day, and that precautions should have been taken, and were not.
Yeah, that's
well,
at the heart of it.
I don't know if you remember, Clayton, I don't know if it was like the following day or whatever, but I was skeptical when I was like, how did they get like Time magazine quality photos of these people inside? Like it was like they were perfectly posed with the flag out. And I was like, that alone made me skeptical.
Well, you had the photographers right alongside of them. They were standing side by side, walking right in. We saw the video, of course, of the Capitol Police taking selfies with some of them and, giving fist bumps and stuff as they were going in. And to Larry's point, they had this intelligence ahead of time, and they didn't do anything to stop it. So
the social media framing of this is that those were just Trump supporters who were sympathetic to the cause of overturning the election, when in fact, what you are suggesting here is that it was more inside than just some sort of people expressing their politics who worked for the Capitol Police.
And what about the pipe bomb side of this, Larry? Like, what about that angle? Where's the discussion about that?
That has gone away. We don't know who did it. They had, some good film coverage of it, video coverage.
Right.
It was planted, I believe, at the DNC headquarters, which is, you know, just... what is that? East of the Capitol, east of the House office buildings. So they've got the clear video of this guy and on a cell phone. the FBI and the Capitol Police, they all have the capability to gather phone records and then through triangulation figure out who is making calls at that time in that area. Now, if they've done that, they haven't released the results, but they certainly should have been able to find out who was calling and who that person was. And they're either hiding it deliberately or they didn't do the work.
I mean, there's a lot of hypocrisy around this, obviously, the focus on this and the fact that we still have not really had much discussion and we have not had condemnation from the White House on assassination attempts towards Supreme Court justices. And so, and the massive dragnet that unfolded on after January 6th, as you mentioned, arresting grandmothers and so forth, and yet we still don't know about the pipe bomb question. We still don't know about like the Capitol Police involvement in this, or the you know the other police involvement, law enforcement involvement in it, and yet we have people showing up to Supreme Court justices' homes, and there's been no condemnation from the White House on this.
Well, and apart from the fact that many that literally they trespass, so-called trespassed on the people's house, how can people who are American citizens trespass on a house that is theirs? That's question number one. But more importantly, they've been held in prison without bond, some for more than a year and a half. This is the kind of treatment that the Soviets used to do to Jewish dissidents in the Soviet Union and would hold them without charge, hold them in the prisons in the gulags. Now we've, you know, I've lived long enough to see the United States behaving like the old Soviet state, where we've got political prisoners. In fact, we have more political prisoners now in the United States than Russia holds. Russia has a total of 303. They're holding over 700 people just from this January 6th incident. And none of them killed, struck, or hit police. They went in, you know, they trespassed on the building. It is just, it's just what's happened.
Yeah. Well, our guest is ex-CIA analyst Larry Johnson. We've got more news to get to here on the show. We're going to talk about what's happening with Ambassador John Bolton and the fallout from his comments on these coups around the world. We'll get there. We're also going to talk about this new ninja variant. But first, you want to tell us about our friends over at Audible?
Sure. So it is road trip season. You may know this already. And perhaps you are looking for a way to pass the time. I want to tell you about our friends over at Audible, because Audible is a great way to get some reading in for either entertainment purposes or research or just to make you a little bit smarter. You know, when you're always on the go and you have time to listen to things, that's where Audible comes in. They offer an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers and new releases to celebrity memoirs, mysteries and thrillers, motivation, wellness, business, and more. In fact, this weekend I'm taking a road trip with my mom, and I downloaded a classic Agatha Christie because I thought that maybe that would be fun for she and I. You'll discover exclusive Audible originals from top celebrities, renowned experts, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title per month to keep from their entire catalog, including the bestsellers and new releases. All Audible members get access to a growing selection of audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts that are included with your membership. You can listen all you want and get more added every month. So let Audible help you discover new ways to laugh, be inspired, or entertained. New members can try it for free for 30 days if you visit audible.com/redacted or text the word redacted to 500-500. That's audible.com/redacted or text redacted to 500-500 to try Audible for free for 30 days. Once again, that's audible.com/redacted.
Well, let's talk about how the United States creates and tries to overthrow governments around the world and has been doing that for decades. We are joined by ex-CIA analyst Larry Johnson, who knows a thing or two, perhaps, about government involvement in coup attempts around the world. And we want to get Larry's take on what Ambassador John Bolton had to say in an interview with Jake Tapper on CNN. Now, we talked a little bit about this last night, and I was actually pretty stunned when we did this story, because there was a good healthy grouping of our audience that was actually stunned and surprised that a former ambassador was admitting that, yes, in fact, he was involved in assassination attempts and coup attempts of foreign leaders, as if the United States doesn't do this. A good portion of our audience, of course, was saying, where have you been living, under a rock? But I think we all have this sort of innocence about us where we like to believe the United States doesn't do this. And so when Ambassador Bolton said this, it all left us a little bit stunned. Watch.
I don't know that I agree with you, to be fair, with all due respect. One doesn't have to be brilliant to attempt a coup.
I disagree with that. As somebody who has helped plan coup d'etat,
yeah,
not here, but, you know, other places, it takes a lot of work. And that's not what he did. It was just stumbling around from one idea to another. Ultimately, he did unleash the rioters at the Capitol. As to that, there's no doubt.
So, oh yeah, I was actively involved in coups. And as we said last night, I do want to play the second part of this because Jake Tapper did follow up on this and did actually press him on this question. Wait a minute, you were actively involved in coups? Will you talk more about that? Here's what he had to say.
To anathematize the rest of the Republican Party, and that's unacceptable.
I do want to ask a follow-up. When we were talking about what is capable, what you need to do to be able to plan a coup, and you cited your expertise having planned coups.
I'm not going to get into the specifics, but...
Successful coups?
Well, I wrote about Venezuela in the book, and it turned out not to be successful. Not that we had all that much to do with it, but I saw what it took for an opposition to try and overturn an illegally elected president, and they failed. The notion that Donald Trump was half as competent as the Venezuelan opposition is laughable. But I think there's another...
I feel like you're stuff you're not...
Yeah, there's some other stuff you're not telling us, he says. Yeah, there's some stuff I'm not telling you. So, Larry, when you watched those comments, what was your kind of initial thought on that? And then we'll kind of unpack what he's not telling us.
Bolton is a buffoon. I mean, he's just a highly credentialed fool. This is, you know, he thinks he did a great job with planning the coup in Venezuela that went nowhere and did nothing. Complete failure. There was a time when the CIA was actively involved overthrowing governments. In the 1950s, overthrew the government of Arbenz and Guatemala, and overthrew the ruler of Iran, who was then replaced by the Shah of Iran. So in both cases, it was serving financial interests beneficial to the United States. United States tried and failed repeated efforts to take out Fidel Castro and eliminate Cuba. I know for, even though in popular mythology, the U.S. is viewed as having played a central role in the coup that ousted Salvador Allende in Chile in 1973, the fact of the matter was that was carried out by the Chilean military. They sort of locked the CIA up and the U.S. embassy and kept them out of the way and just said, you know, though, yeah, thanks for your suggestions. We'll take care of it. States involved in multiple changes of government there. We were involved with replacing government leadership in Iraq and helping shape who was going to quote the country. So, and then we tried to take out Bashar Assad in right. Syria, one of the latest ones. So, the United States has a pretty lousy track record for replacing governments and creating something better in its place. It's just like the question of sanctions. We keep imposing economic sanctions on countries. Please show me one example, just one, where that's worked. You know, where right. the sanctions have brought the changes that have put us in charge and given us the power and control we wanted. It hasn't happened. And yet we keep doing it over and over, which, you know, was it Einstein's definition of insanity, that you keep doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different outcome?
You know, Jake Tapper didn't push him on it really at all. He just sort of asked that question, didn't really push him on it too much on it. But, you know, Max Blumenthal at the Gray Zone, of course, interviewed Nicolas Maduro, who was the target of that assassination. And Nicolas says, yeah, this was ordered by John Bolton. Listen.
Now, a year ago. It'll be a year in August. There was the attempt. I can tell you that today I have proof that the assassination attempt was ordered by John Bolton in the White House.
You're saying John Bolton personally commanded an assassination attempt against you?
And he waited for the results in the White House. If you dig deeper, you'll see it someday. The proof will come out how John Bolton, in coordination with then-Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos, and they gave the task to Julio Borges, a former legislator in Venezuela.
Larry, your thoughts on that? That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think it's plausible. Well, I wouldn't put it past, you know, Bolton's dumb enough to try to do something like that. We're terrible at playing chess. And what I mean by that is, when you make a move, you need to anticipate what the counter move will be, and then you need to be prepared to make your move to that counter move, and then what their counter move will be to your counter move, and play it out for four or five levels, because you're never quite sure where that first move is going to lead. Well, okay, killing Maduro, would have made them feel good, and I have no doubt that Bolton may have been able to sell that to Donald Trump, but again, with Bolton puffing himself up as this kind of self-importance, and yeah, I've planned and run coups. Well, you obviously haven't planned and run them very well, because you can't point to one recent success on his part. The other coup I forgot to mention that had nothing to do with Bolton, but did have to do with Obama, was the coup in Ukraine, which ousted Poroshenko, I believe, was the president at the time. He was ousted in February 2014. And again, that move has unleashed a civil war, has resulted in the deaths of tens of thousands of civilians. And now, God knows how many Ukrainian soldiers have died as a result of this war.
Yeah, yes. And we saw the involvement of Victoria Nuland, of course, and installing this puppet regime. And, of course, we saw the fallout of that. So have we ever had like a successful coup like that's actually worked and benefited somehow the United States?
I think that's not how, I don't know, human life works, right?
But I guess
we're
that's
not
the
really
question,
supposed
right?
to live by the
I mean,
iron
they took
fist
over the American
government
pretty much. Would that be considered a coup?
I guess, yeah. They run the whole deep state, right? I mean, I guess that worked. Yeah.
How's that working out now with almost 10% inflation, declining wages, the layoffs mounting in the United States on both the real estate, car possessions, repossessions going up? Yeah, that's been,
yeah. But Larry, the job numbers are the highest.
Baby formula shortages.
The job numbers are the highest they've ever been. Larry, what are you talking about?
Right.
Yeah. Buried in the statistics that came out yesterday was the fact that the wages in the inflation that took place under pandemic, wages were going up even though prices were going up with inflation. What was that revealed in the statistics that came out yesterday is that, in fact, wages are dropping, and they had the highest level of unemployment claims filed today. I don't know if you saw that news.
Wow.
That came out today. So this thing is turning, and it's not turning in a good direction.
Yeah, some big. I mean, we can talk about this. Let's talk about this new push, right? Because this is where the corporate media right now, and where the White House is hoping for in the fall. Because there's big trouble for Democrats right now as they head into this midterm election. New polls out today show that President Biden's confidence level is at the worst for an American president in U.S. history ever. Right? They were talking about this with Trump. No. It's worse ever. We've never seen poll numbers this low for an American president on the confidence level. This cannot be good come November. Even the words Jimmy Carter, of course, have been thrown around over the past number of months, a lot by media figures. Here's Neil Cavuto, my old colleague at Fox, Neil Cavuto, asking White House advisor Jared Bernstein about Jimmy Carter being thrown around. Listen.
Do you guys ever start feeling like it's Jimmy Carter deja vu? And that's where we're headed.
I think the difference there is between the kind of stagflation they were facing and the very different, in many ways more nuanced economy we're facing. You know, you like to focus on the headwinds, and I get it. If it bleeds, it leads. I understand that.
I focus on reality, Jared. I focus on the numbers. I have no political agenda here. I just look at the data, and the data doesn't look encouraging, right?
Well, that's because you're choosing which data to exclusively look at here.
I think I gave you 11 pieces of data.
So look, the headline and the core inflation are, to quote the president, unacceptably high. Okay. So that is absolutely a relevant data point for you to bring to the table, as you have.
So how do you stop this bleeding? How do you rally voters in time for a midterm election? Well, you enlist the power of the corporate media to start scaring voters into thinking that there's a new, more dangerous COVID variant that's out there coming in time just for the election. They're literally calling it like the midterm variant now. Over the past 24 hours, you may have noticed the corporate media is trying to scare us all with new, most dangerous, the dangerous headlines. Look at this. This is the Daily Beast headline. This new ninja COVID variant is the most dangerous one yet. And the Today Show pushing this new variant. Who better to ask than White House Dr. Ashish Jha, who is the COVID coordinator. Here's how the Today Show tackled this morning. Watch.
Let's move now to new worries about COVID and a summer surge driven by a highly transmissible new variant. So in the last 2 weeks, COVID cases, hospitalizations, and deaths all up. So is this the beginning of a new wave? Well, we've got just the man to ask. Dr. Ashish Jha is at the White House. He's the COVID-19 response coordinator. Dr. Jha, good morning. Good to see you. Okay, so let's break this down. So what is the cause of this surge? Is it that this variant is so elusive that sometimes even the shots and boosters can't get it? Is it that we have waning immunity? We got our shots so long ago that we're due for a booster? Which is it?
Yeah, great questions. Actually, a bit of both, right? So what we know is BA5 is highly immune evasive, meaning you could have been infected 3 months ago, and we're seeing a lot of people who got infected recently getting now reinfected. People who got a booster or a vaccine shot last year are getting breakthrough infections. So the key message from this right now is if you've not gotten a shot in 2022, especially if you're over 50, you got to go out and get one because that's the best way to protect yourself.
There you go. I mean, Larry Johnson, ex-CIA analyst with us. David's here. Natalie's here. I mean, this is so you may have already had it. You may have already had it. Just got to keep running out, getting more boosters, getting more boosters, getting more boosters. I saw an article yesterday that said Big Pharma is upset because they can't figure out how to monetize long COVID.
Long COVID.
They can't figure it out. So what do you do? I guess you keep pushing this new strain, right?
So you think that it's politically convenient to have another round of the pandemic for the losing party. And, you know, recent memory would support that because during the pandemic, we had so many stimulus bills that were so good for politicians. And the pandemic was, if nothing else, you know, for many very team building, right? We believed we were all in it together. We did things for other people that were inconvenient for us, right? Thinking that we were being altruistic. So you're saying it's very conveniently timed to have a resurgence.
That's my feeling on it. And I think I'll ask Larry and David this question. I mean, I think that's a great point, right? I hadn't really thought about the stimulus side of this, but remember Donald Trump, remember the effects in the election, Larry, right? That when those checks were hitting people's wallets and it said Donald Trump on the check and they were asking voters in Florida down in your neck of the woods about that, there were people who literally thought Donald Trump had sent them a check and it actually reflected in the election results.
Well, this go around, that dog ain't gonna hunt. And here's why. 2 years ago, you could get away with saying, hey, you got to get vaccinated and even get that booster. It's going to keep you from getting sick. But people are smart enough now to recognize that, hey, Dr. Fauci, who's had two vaccinations and two boosters, he got the COVID. So comedians like Jeff Dunham have now begun, you know, and Dunham's a ventriloquist and he's got a dummy that looks an awful lot like Joe Biden. And he's got that dummy doing a press conference to explaining why you need to get more COVID shots. And it's pure comedy. And yet Dunham doesn't have to make anything up. It's just like, Okay, do you have to wear one mask? Yeah, wear one. How about two? Yeah, wear two. Yeah, how about three? Yeah, wear three. Do you need a mask? Well, no, not necessarily. Well, why do I need the vaccine? Well, they keep you from getting sick. But yeah, you had the vaccine and you got sick. Yes. But so why do I get the vaccine? Well, to keep you from getting, I mean, it's just, now, people, I remember I had arguments with people about wearing masks 2 years ago. I worked my way through college as a respiratory therapy technician. So I had some background in this. And my wife ran the critical care unit at the National Institutes of Health. She knows that little creep, Fauci. We knew what was necessary from a medical standpoint. Well, the same person who was arguing with me 2 years ago about, oh, my God, I got to have a mask to protect myself, now goes, yeah, I agree. We don't need it.
Yes.
We had the ultimate test.
Nowadays, you can be a COVID denier without being a COVID denier, right? We all can sort of agree that the mask may not be the level of protection we all thought it was. We, like, I'm reading this article right now that says that that the current immunities on the market don't actually address Omicron, right? So we all know this now.
Right.
So there's not so much, like, it's, you're not a crazy, you know, person for saying I'm not going along with these things anymore.
And you, Larry, you're saying like we have the biggest test case ever, right?
Yeah, but if you compare Florida and New York, that's here you have empirical evidence. New York mask mandate, wear it everywhere, wear it to bed, wear it to the bathroom. Florida, no mask mandate. If the masks work to prevent COVID infection, you would expect that the rate of New York would be far lower, and the rate of infection in Florida would be far higher. Well, that's not what happened. They had basically roughly the same infection rates, with the difference being when you put in the algorithm for the fact that the population in Florida is the second oldest in the United States. The only other state with an older population is Maine. When you account for the number of, you know, I'm a youngster here, I'm 67. When you got the number of 75, 80, 90-year-olds running around, and the fact that, you know, some of them died, they're going to die anyway, but you adjust for that, it just shows that the mask did nothing. I mean, it did nothing, because you don't have to do some massive global study. Here you had two states, and they show the similar thing of having lots of visitors coming in from other countries and other places. In Florida, it's Miami and Orlando. In New York, it's New York City. So it's just the people are now, they're getting attuned to the realities, to the facts. And they're not going to let the government, you know, fool them again. You get fooled once,
well, and that's
okay.
What I,
not going to get fooled
And that's
twice.
What I was going to say. So it's like when it first happened, there was too many unknowns and people were rightfully scared. I mean, I was concerned too. And then fortunately, there were some smart people out there telling information. And no matter, like, the social media tried very hard. These big tech companies tried very hard to suppress this information. But thanks to social media, we were able to get that information. And so now when I do polls on our channel, asking if people are going to partake in the next version or whatever, the boosters or whatever, out of like 90 to 100,000 votes, it's like 90% no. So I don't think that this is going to benefit them if a new variant comes out, because people have woken up and they understand that they've been fooled.
Yeah,
unless, again, it's not necessarily about the medical effects, right, on people, because no one's saying I can't go to a play date with you because we're still quarantining for COVID, right? People are out. They are living their lives.
Right.
Most, it does feel like you can't put the horse back in the barn unless there's a way to stimulus, right? I saw a protest today where people were protesting record high rents. I'm not exactly sure where it was. And they had signs that said cancel rent. That is something that politicians have absolutely shown that they will do if they think they've got an emergency they can pin it on. So could it help the Democratic Party to start giving away tchotchke in the way of stimulus, rent, student loan pausing? Again, those things absolutely could happen.
Right. There's no emergency with this for children at all. And as I read 2 days ago, there's a report about polls among parents for young kids, and apparently that ship has sailed. Like, parents are saying, no, I'm not doing it. So,
well, then also the CDC in a report had admitted that they were not paying attention to VAERS, like at all, not paying
VAERS,
attention
to the
VAERS,
which is the victim or the adverse effects reporting network.
Right.
So you're not paying attention to the system you set up to tabulate adverse effects. Unbelievable.
Yet today, the FDA approved the Novavax vaccine, I believe, and the CDC is expected to follow just a day or two after. But they still do it. Well, at least now they are publicly admitting that there is a risk of myocarditis with this and others. And at least now they're saying that, like, even in a Reuters article about it, this is printed now. So, whereas before there was such deniability, now it is a part of the conversation we are allowed to have.
I wanted to talk about something Larry mentioned here. We'll finish up on this, which is the mask mandate question. So, Dr. Jha was asked about this on the Today Show about renewed mask mandates as we head into the fall. And he did not dismiss that. In fact, he's leaning more towards this than anything else and saying it really falls down to the states. So listen to what he had to say about incoming mask mandates for the fall once again.
And that's why, especially in crowded airports, but on airplanes, I'm still wearing a mask. Just a good way to protect yourself and to stop the spread to others.
Do you foresee any kind of mandates? I know you say you wear one. I've seen, you know, some people wear them on planes. Do you expect any mandates in any indoor spaces as we look ahead?
You know, the thing about mandates, Hoda, and I've been saying this for 2 years, really, is that when it comes to, let's say, city or statewide mandates, these are really decisions made by local political leaders. Again, remember, the science here is very clear. It's settled that wearing masks indoors in crowded spaces helps prevent infection, helps prevent spread. There might be cities or states that look at that and make a decision to move forward with the mandate. I know other places won't.
Yeah, there you go. So, A renewed push for mask mandates once again, unbelievable. I mean, in some areas, like, there's still, you know, we still have these mandates. So
there's still mandates here. Like, if you go to any medical facility, like, I got to go to the dentist tomorrow, I still have to wear a mask. Any kind of medical facility or anything like that, you have to wear a mask still.
Yeah,
I think there were certain school districts right up until the end of the year still mandating it. So they ended the school year. They didn't have it off early. It was all the way up until the end of the school year. And they're still assessing when the kids come back in the fall, if they're going to make them wear masks coming back in the fall again, Larry.
And that is the absurdity of it, as David just pointed out, that you're standing there in the dentist's office with your mouth wide open, and all of a sudden now magically, because you've taken your mask off, you're not going to be passing germs or viruses. I mean, good God, you know, and people see through this. They finally say, okay, wait a second, stop jerking me around, and stop telling me that this wonderful pile of cow manure is actually chocolate mousse. Doesn't smell like it, doesn't taste like it.
Well, at least you went as far as to taste it. You'd be braver than me. Once it walked in my way, I'd be like, man, this thing is rotten.
But
Larry goes all in on it.
It could just be a really bad smelling mousse. I'm just going to taste it in case.
Well, we should end on that.
From a mousse.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, the giant moose pie. We should wrap it up on that. Our guest has been Larry Johnson, ex-CIA analyst. Great to have him here for the hour discussing a lot of the top stories today. Where can people find more of what you do? You write, you cover, Larry?
I'm at sonar21.com, and I try to get an article up a day, just whatever the spirit moves me.
Whenever the spirit moves you. He's got great coverage over there. He's done some excellent coverage of what's been going on in Ukraine geopolitically, and his insights into the intelligence community are second to none. So our thanks to Larry for joining us here on the show. Thanks so much, Larry. Really great to have you here today.
Great to be with you all. Thanks a lot, Clayton.
You bet. Thanks, Larry. And before we wrap up, we do want to tell you about our final show sponsor. And then we're going to get to some super chats here, and we'll get everyone out on time. So we got some super chats. We get them fired up in just a second. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at SoFi. With all the jargon flying around right now, it can be hard to figure out how to start investing. So whether you're eager to get started investing or you already know the ropes and you want to diversify your portfolio, SoFi has your back. No commissions on trading stocks and ETFs, plus no account fees or hidden fees. You can use fractional shares that start as low as $5 to buy brand name stocks, even if you don't have a couple of $1,000 laying around your house. You can actually get access to that very, very cheaply. Complimentary financial planners are ready to help with any questions, whether you're stuck or whether you need to get started, what to do next. They have a team that will help you. You can save for retirement with traditional Roth or SEP IRAs. Get hands-on with active investing. Or let SoFi's number one ranked automated investing tool, they call it the Robo-Advisor, take the stress out of building and managing a diversified portfolio. They will do it for you. That's right. You can set your own investment goals, saving for retirement or building up for a down payment on a house or something else like that. Right now, they also have cryptocurrency too, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Cardano, 30 different coins that you can choose from, all of that inside of SoFi. So cut through the jargon and make investing easier with SoFi. Visit SoFi.com/redacted to learn how you can win up to $1,000 in free stocks when you open an account. That's SoFi.com/redacted. Brokerage and active investing products offered through SoFi Securities LLC, member FINRA, FINRA, SPIC, which is, what's the, how do you say that? Is that an initialism? SIPC, SIPC. Check them out over at SoFi.com/redacted. All right. So good show today, guys. Thank you guys for joining us. We had some super chats coming in. Yes. We'll put them up here on the screen.
We have from Moroccan Insider, Emily W. and Brizzy 864 with super stickers. Thank you.
Oh, Philip, before we move on to more super chats, we had that one. I forgot to do it at the top of the show. Do you have that image I wanted to show before we get deeper into the super chats? Yes, pop that one up there.
I sure do.
So this person wrote me about 2 hours ago and said, YouTube unsubscribed me from your channel, laughing my ass off. They hate the truth. And this happens, right? People like YouTube mm-hmm. will unsubscribe you. So you
every
have
month.
To every month it happens. They just go through and they just decide that they're going to unsubscribe you from things that you've subscribed to.
They use this excuse that they're removing bots. That we all know that you are not a bot.
Right. Yes. So this person was unsubscribed. Make sure you're subscribed. It's very simple to do. Just hit the little subscribe button, and then you can turn on the bell notification because we're live. Our show is live every Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So just click on that little bell notification.
Yeah. If the button is red, you are not subscribed. So look right now on your phone or on your desktop. If that subscribe button is red, you are not subscribed. So click it.
All right. All right. Back to Super Chat. I just wanted to mention that.
All right. We got John Venturini with 1111. I think you called it that, Natalie, when we were live.
Yes.
Did
thank
anyone
you.
Do the extra credit assignment last night and see the 1983 TV movie The Day After? Yep. Couple that with the NYC nuclear PSA, and it's darn near scary right now.
The Day
Did
After.
Did you hear my theory?
No, I've never seen that movie.
So
by
we
the
got
way.
A. We got a strike, or I mean, a claim, copyright claim yesterday because of that video, right?
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, how brilliant of them to make that video knowing that every media outlet was going to cover it. And then all they go is claim everybody's video and they make a fortune.
Yeah, they claimed all the revenue from anyone that did a video on it. So last night, my old colleague Tucker Carlson's show, we did it. And then a few hours later, it was on Tucker's show. They covered it. So if they filed a copyright claim on Fox News, then they got all that revenue.
Oh,
from that
I didn't
video.
Realize it works that way.
So maybe that was their motivation. Yeah. Like they're like, hey, let's make this because we know people are going to freak out and everybody's going to be like, oh my gosh, what are they doing?
Unbelievable.
Oh, okay. So
David, talk to me. Oh, I was going to say, David, talk to me after the show because I got a business idea between us. I think.
I got a PSA idea that I want to run.
Our video production is going to be way better though.
Right.
So what is the movie The Day After? I remember images from this. My parents this when I was younger.
Is that
and...
with Jake Gyllenhaal, is it? Is
no,
that...
no, it's a 1983 movie. I remember seeing images of this, of like
Here's
rolling,
the movie poster.
It was like rolling fire.
Here's the movie poster. The
well,
day after.
It looks more like this, right? So
they
it's
told
like
us it would be impossible
cloud.
For us to make this movie. They told us it would be impossible for you to watch it. We hope nothing is impossible. The day after. Beyond.
No,
is that
it's,
the wrong
it's,
one?
No, it's this one. It looks very much like rolling out fire, like people running from fire. I remember this as a child, like thinking about it and seeing it. And I don't know if my parents had a trailer on or it's not the kind of thing that my parents would have watched.
Steve Guttenberg, was he in it?
Maybe. It looked like this, like people running from things like that, like rolling. Anyway, I was thinking of that too when we did this. So did this viewer 1111 say that they watched it or it was on? Or because they put it on it because they were inspired by the PSA?
Yeah, was it on TV last night, just on television? That's crazy.
He said, did anyone do the extra credit assignment last night and see the 1983 TV movie the day after? I think he's just
saying
I don't think it was on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the picture if you guys want to take my screen here. Perhaps the most important film ever made, The Day After, when war games
That guy is not listening to the data. Like, look how far he needs to be in his house in the middle.
Right.
On his phone, on Twitter.
Yep. This person is exactly. Like taking a picture of it. Like, oh, I'm just going to take a picture of
No, they're not. I think they're running from it. Because I remember seeing some images as I walked through the living room and then walked a little faster because it was like people running.
Yeah, In the 80s,
they would have... In the 80s, they would have ran from it, right? But now, in this day and age, there'd be girls doing TikTok dances.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, John Lithgow, John Colum, Jason Robards. Anyway.
Okay,
People be doing their dances on TikTok with the nuclear thing behind them. Look at how pretty
that
is.
So tonight's assignment is Dr. Strangelove. For anybody hasn't watched it, go watch that.
Yeah.
That I have seen.
That's a great movie.
Deepak, big news from RBI. Rupee is now enabled to trade internationally. This is being discussed nowhere. This is huge news. I hope you talk about it. Thank you. I live in the States.
I did look this up briefly during one of our breaks, and he's right. It seems like the Reserve Bank of India decided to allow imports and exports to be paid in India's currency. And so we've talked a lot here about, the Cold War around being the dominant currency. So anything that weakens trade using U.S. dollars is notable. And now India saying, okay, well, we'd like to be paid in our currency too. We don't want to pay exchange rates.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Thank you for bringing that up. I will look further into that for the newsletter tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right. All right.
The Iranian Putin, I love fire my Iran. I don't know what the fire means, but I love my Iran.
Okay.
Iranian Putin. Ojan, R.I.P. Ivana Trump.
Yes, she was. She had a heart attack and died today. The former wife of former President Trump and mother of his oldest three kids. That's true. That news broke today.
Eric the Viking in our chat says, watch X-Files Season 10, Episode 6. You won't believe what you're seeing. I will watch that. I was a huge X-Files fan. I will try to watch that.
Tim Otey,
Season 10, Episode 6.
The New York PSA on how to survive a nuke attack scares me to death. Could a dirty nuke on New York be their last-ditch effort to maintain power and war on Russia?
Yeah, and we kind of talked about that. I mentioned that with Larry, that comment. So
yeah.
To get that comment about what would happen would be devastating.
Vittorio Penza, we need to end WEF people. So there we go. That is all the super chats.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. One more. Mm-hmm. You're all truly fantastic. Blessings.
Oh, blessings to you.
Thank you so
much. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you
so much.
That's
a good one to end on.
Yeah, it's a great one to end on. Our thanks to Larry Johnson, who joined us today on the show for the full hour. We will not have a show tomorrow night live on Friday nights. We try to spend some time with our family. But we will have content for you this weekend, and we are back on Monday evening at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Please make sure you're subscribed. Turn on the little bell notification dingus so that you're notified when we are live. We do have a daily newsletter. It is we're working on the branding change right now. It's saw the updates today. Right now, it's still called morninginvest.com, but if you sign up, it'll carry over. So if you sign up, it'll carry over to the new redacted morning newsletter with the new change of format and everything, but it's a daily newsletter. It's fantastic. You can read it in about 5, 7, 8 minutes over your cup of coffee in the morning. And we
put they can actually go to redactedinc.inc now and see the new branding. So you can sign up for the newsletter now at redacted.inc.
Oh, you can.
If you want to send it. Yes.
All right. So go to redacted.inc now and sign up for it as well. Whatever you like.
Yeah,
whatever
come on, Philip. What's with that graphic?
Whatever your fancy is. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever you fancy. Go to redacted.inc right there. Oh, here it is on the screen. Take a look at this. There you go. Here's what happens. There you go. So if you go to redacted.inc, this is what you see right now. You'll go sign up for our free newsletter, and you can also become a VIP member. So sign up for the free newsletter that we work on every day. Natalie writes it. She works very hard on it. And we get it to your inbox first thing in the morning. So, all right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you back here on Monday. Be safe, everyone. And don't eat any chocolate mousse.
It's an inside joke.
Unless it smells good.
Right, unless it smells good. We'll see you, everyone. Bye.
This is Rick Burgess from The Rick Burgess Show. If you're still auto-renewing your car insurance without shopping around, you are probably throwing money away. I'm telling you, go check out Insurify. In about 2 minutes, totally free, you can compare quotes from over 100 companies all in one place. Now, here's what I love. Insurify actually monitors your rates and alerts you when prices drop, so you never miss out on a better deal. Millions of people have used it to stop overpaying, and there's no reason you shouldn't too. Do yourself a favor. See what you can save right now at Insurify.com.